Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Addiction 911 show. My name is Christina Rowe, and I am the publisher of Addiction 911 magazine. And I'm here today with Tim Ryan. Tim Ryan was a successful entrepreneur who fell prey to an addiction to heroin and other opiates. After serving 14 months in the Sheridan, Illinois Correctional Center, he embraced his own personal recovery through 12-step programs, quit his six-figure job, and has committed his life to helping others battle the disease of addiction. Today, he is a Midwest Regional Coordinator for Banyan Treatment Centers of Pompano Beach, Florida, and the founder of A Man in Recovery Foundation. His website can be found at www.amirf.org, and he can be reached directly at amaninrecovery@gmail.com. So welcome, Tim. I'm so thrilled to have you on the show today.
I'm blessed to be on the show.
I wanted to ask you, you call yourself a man in recovery. Where did that concept come from, and what does it mean to you?
Well, you know, that's, my thoughts ponder a lot, and that's basically what I am. My motto is, I'm a man in recovery, helping one addict at a time, and I consider myself a hope dealer. I take people from dope to hope. And I'm a man on a mission here. I don't want anyone to have to go to the Illinois Department of Corrections to get clean and sober the way I did. And as we'll talk a little more, I don't want any parent to have to go through what my former wife went through. Heroin, opiates took not only me or her husband of 18 years, it took her beautiful dream house we had built and lived in for 10 years. And it took our firstborn child. I lost my 20-year-old son, Nicholas, to a heroin overdose about 13 and a half months ago.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry to hear that. I mean, the toll of addiction, the price is so high as you've lived it. Can you tell us a little bit about your heroin addiction and what led you to a life in recovery?
Yeah, you know, I struggled on and off with, well, I struggled my entire life with alcoholism, drug addiction. First it was cocaine and alcohol. And at 21, I checked myself into drug treatment in 1990. And I can remember a gentleman coming in and speaking, and there was 38 of us, and saying, one of you will be sober in a year. And I said, well, what do I need to do? He said, don't drink and go to those 12-step meetings. And that's what I did. I made it about a year and a half. I embraced the 12-step program, but I never took any of the suggestions. I never got a sponsor. I never worked the steps. And I went in and out of the doors for the next 28 years. In 2002, I was clean or abstinent a year, going back to those 12-step meetings, and I took a friend in the program to go down to Chicago and move out of his apartment, and his roommate was doing heroin and said, hey, do you want to try a bag? And granted, I was a year clean, but I didn't have the coping skills or life skills to truly know, and I shouldn't do it. And I snorted one bag of heroin, and that ultimately led me down a 12-year road to utter destruction. And at the peak of my addiction, you know, I had about a $500-a-day heroin habit.
My God, wow. I mean, from what I understand, heroin, it's an epidemic now. It's one of the worst addictions, especially amongst young teenagers. It seems like the heroin is really taking a lot of lives, and it's just been rampant, you know, all over the country with kids dying from heroin.
Yeah, as you mentioned that, Saturday morning, there was a 19-year-old girl in my hometown that succumbed to a heroin overdose. I've probably buried 60 kids this year alone. It's a pandemic. It's out of control. You know, kids can get a bag for $5. They don't understand the power of this drug. And it's interesting, and you're absolutely right, you know, the average heroin addict is a 22-year-old middle-class white female or a 23-year-old white middle-class male. The youngest kid I've worked with is 12 years old. The oldest is 72 years old. So this affects everyone. A lot starts with the prescription pain pills, but it's easier for kids to get a bag of heroin than it is beer. Most of these kids today never even mess around with alcohol. They went right into marijuana, pain pills, and heroin.
Wow. I mean, that's really incredible to me. I mean, I'm in my 40s and, I grew up in this teenager in the 80s and I never saw anyone do heroin. It was cocaine back then. That was the big thing. So it's like shocking to me, that this is such right now. The heroin seems to be the it drug of, of the choice of drug for these kids.
It absolutely is, and I'm 46. I grew up, in the same generation, and cocaine was the end drug. And my most people's conception today of the heroin addict is a homeless person on the corner with a needle in their arm, and that's just not the case. The cartels are flooding the streets with it. It's so accessible, and where I live outside of Chicago. These kids can shoot to Chicago. Chicago has over 100 open air drug markets. It's easier to get than buying a pack of cigarettes. And, it's killing these kids, whether it's the first time they're mixing it with benzos or alcohol, and then the kids start overdosing. They're afraid to call 911. And unfortunately, it's killing this generation of kids.
Wow. And it may be that a lot of parents, maybe around our age or a little older, and they don't see the signs of this because, like you said, their perception is, heroin's the addict on the street who's homeless and it's not going to be their child, So what would you say to parents right now? What should we be looking for heroin addiction? Like, what are the
Well,
signs and
the signs are there, and what I see a lot of parents today, it's two income families. They're trying to keep up with the Joneses. They're so busy. The kids are on their cell phones. When I grew up, you sat down and had dinner with mom and dad at 6:30. That's just what you did. And the parents are so busy, they don't see the signs. When I was in my active addiction, my wife didn't know for a year and a half. I could still function, but a lot of these kids today aren't working. You see the hygiene, you see the weight loss, looking for the pinned pupils. You see them nodding out. You see straws laying around the house, little bags, plastic bags or tinfoil, money's disappearing, things along those lines, the hygiene. But a lot of parents are very naive. Not my kid. We're a good Christian family. That has nothing to do with it. You're not with your kids 24 hours a day, and the kids make a bad choice. Nobody grows up and says, "Hey, I want to be a heroin addict." It could be that, they're at a party smoking some of this marijuana, which is much stronger than it was 30 years ago. They have a couple drinks of alcohol, and someone offers them something. Their inhibitions are down, and they say yes, and they unleash Pandora's box. But the parents need to know what's going on. And I offer a couple programs with a couple police officers. It's called Dare to Know What Your Kids Are Up To. And we offer cell phone monitoring software, computer monitoring software. We give away high-end drug test kits to where you can see what your kids are doing. Most of the kids are making all their drug deals today through text message and Facebook Messenger. You need to know what your kids are up to.
Wow. Now, how can, is this just in Chicago? How can people like around the country get into that program or get the hand, you get the hold of some of the software and these tools?
We offer this program nationwide. They can go to my website, which you listed, www.amirf.org. They can pick up the phone and call me at 312-502-8671. And we offer this program. We have two events this week, and we do it through police departments. Because it costs about $5,000 minimum to put the event on, but that's for the drug test kits, and we give everything away. And then I need to pay my speakers to come in. But it's what happens then is when there is an issue, parents don't know where to turn to. They go to the internet and type in drug treatment. Well, there's tens of thousands of drug treatment centers. We need to know, and the family might have no insurance. They might have state insurance. They might have good insurance. So we are the connectors on where to get the people help, how to educate them, how to connect them with the tools prior to getting into treatment and upon release from treatment.
Wow, I mean it, so what would you say to a parent, that is there anything they can do as far as talking to their child? Anything, once they discover that the child has a problem and maybe the child's resistant, he doesn't want to go to, or she doesn't want to go to treatment. They really need the professional help at that point because this is something really difficult to deal with.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many families I go and meet with, and I called, I have a come to Jesus meeting with the child, and if the child's living at your home, you're the parent. And I don't care if they're over 18 years old. Once people cross into the world of opiate addiction, 5% of them get clean and sober. So your child ultimately has three choices on what's going to happen. They're going to get into recovery, they're going to get caught up in the prison system, or they're going to die. Those are the three places opiate addicts end up.
Wow. I mean, it's
Yeah,
so
you need to
traumatic.
do everything in your power to help that child without enabling. And if they don't want the help, there's the door. Wish you the best of luck. But why are you still paying for your kid's cell phone or paying for their car when they're 19 or 20 years old in inactive addiction? You need to pull every resource away, force them down to their bottom, and give them an opportunity to go in and get the help. Unfortunately, our treatment systems are broke too. A lot of families don't have the resources to go to a Banyan treatment center or whatever. But I've had people walk into my opiate support groups that were high on heroin, and we got them through their dope sickness and really started working with them. And getting into recovery isn't just going to a 12-step meeting or a faith-based program or seeing a counselor. You got to change every aspect of your life. And those are the things we really do working with these kids. My sidekick, Kyle, the kid, he's 19 years old. He's coming up on 10 months clean and sober. And Kyle's got a wonderful life today. He had been in treatment 6 times. His parents always thought he was going in for marijuana because he lied. He was a full-blown heroin addict from 15 to 18 years old. Parents never knew. So my saying is, to be aware is to be alive. You need to educate yourselves. But then you have the stigma aspect. A lot of parents whose kids are in addiction, they don't want to tell anyone. And I explain to parents, if your child, God forbid, had cancer or lupus or diabetes, you're going to tell everybody. You need to let people know my child's struggling with a progressive and chronic disease that's going to kill them, and you need to do everything you can to help that child get the help before I'm standing at their casket and you're going, Tim, I wish I would have listened to you. I wish we would have done this because I've got a wonderful life today, but you don't have to go to the depths of hell I walked through to get clean and sober.
And you went through with your son. You were telling us about your son Nick, who died of the over an overdose. And this was about 6 months after he was released from prison.
After I was released from
Oh,
prison,
after you were released. Okay.
Nick, I was a bogus parent that let Nick and his buddies drink in the basement and smoke weed. Of course, I was in my active addiction. My kids didn't know I did heroin until Nick was about 17, and I'd went to prison in 08 for driving on revoked licenses. I did 61 days, came out. But I can remember my wife at the time saying, Tim, I'm going to nursing school. And I said, you don't need to work. And she said, well, the way you're living, you're going to end up in two places. You're going to end up dead or back in prison. I need to take care of these 4 kids. 2 years later, I overdosed while driving, hit 2 cars, almost killed 4 people. By the grace of God, they're all okay. And I was sentenced to the Illinois Department of Corrections. Prior to me going to prison, I fought my case for 21 months. Nick was 17, and I was dope sick one day. And when you're sick from opiates, you're hot, you're cold. So I was taking a bath, and Nick walked in the bathroom and said, "What's wrong, Dad?" And I said, "What do you think? I'm dope sick." And he said, "Not anymore." And he left 2 bags of heroin on the bathroom counter. I got out of the bathtub, I did those 2 bags, I went in his room, and I said, "Nick, what the hell are you doing?" And he said, "Dad, I'm just selling a little bit." I said, "Nick, you need to shut this down. You know what this drug has done to me." And these words will haunt me. My son looked at me and said, "Well, Dad, you're a successful drug addict." And I said, "Why would you say that?" And he said, "Well, you got an office in the Wrigley building. We've got a beautiful house. You make a good living." And, 3 months later, my son and I were snorting heroin together. So that's where this disease progresses. I spent almost 14 months in prison. My wife divorced me. We lost our house in foreclosure. That wonderful lady found me a little townhouse in Naperville, Illinois, where I live now for 3 reasons. So I could walk to the Alano Club to go to my 12-step meetings, I could walk to the train, and I could walk downtown. My son was in treatment for the sixth time. I went met with Nick. He's now 20. And hey, Nick, we can do so many things together. At that time, I was about 18 months sober. Yeah, Dad, you're right. 30 days out of treatment. He was back in Cook County Jail for selling bogus pills, trying to buy heroin. We talked every day on the phone. He spent 45 days in jail, got out. And his mom met with him, took him to lunch, and said, Nick, we're done. You can't go to my house. You can't go to your dad's. You're not going to grandma's. Oh, no, my girlfriend and I are going to do this. 5 days out of jail, I talked to Nick, and I said, Nick, come to my house and get some Narcan. Reverses the effects of an opiate overdose. And he said, Dad, don't worry. I'm not on that BS anymore. 2 days later, Shannon called me and said, Nick overdosed. We got to the hospital, Tim and Shannon Ryan here to see our son Nicholas, and 30 seconds later, the chaplain walked out. I knew the cards were up then, but, and I'll ask people, I'll say, what was my first thought after I knew my son had passed on? And 90% of the people say, you wanted to go get high or you wanted to use. No, my first thought was I'll be at the 6 o'clock 12-step meeting that night, and that's what I did because I had the tools, but my son died on my 21-month sobriety date. About 2 weeks after that, I met with my former wife, and she said, Tim, I truly believe God put you in Nick and I's life for you to go through all your struggles, for Nick to go through his, for Nick to unfortunately pass on and set the stage for what you're going to do next. I put 33 of my son's friends into treatment. I run my foundation. I work for Banyan Treatment Center. I speak in high schools. I speak in colleges. I'll talk to anywhere, anytime. I am the face of addiction. But if I can, you know, God willing, I make it to November 1st, I'll have 3 years clean and sober, and I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I was blessed with a beautiful baby daughter. 3.5 weeks ago, you know, God calls one of my kids home and blesses me with another. So bottom line is I got to keep my recovery first and foremost.
Wow, my God, you've really been through hell and back. And it's just incredible how what happened with your son, you've used as your inspiration to save so many lives now. So your son, you know, like your ex-wife said, you know, he lives on. He's doing his work from above because you're doing your work here, you know, to save other kids.
And well, really, I'll tell you, every morning I read my 3 meditation books. I talk to God. I talk to Nick. And I say, all right, what's the plan today, guys? I'm living your will because my will always got me in trouble. And the final test was 2.5 months after my son died, I run what I call an opiate recovery group. I've got 5 of them going in 5 different towns, 5 days a week. But the difference is I have the parents or loved one come with the addict at the same time. And I'll have 50 to 75 parents. I'll have 20 to 30 addicts. Well, 2.5 months after Nick died, I'm working with 12 addicts. And about 10 minutes in, I looked at this kid and I said, where do I know you from? I never forget a face. And he said, oh, I knew your son, Nick. I said, really? Did you used to hang out at her house? He said, no. Then it hit me, Nick, dead, hospital, the kids had brought him. I looked at the kid. I said, my son died with you. He said, your son died at my house. So I kind of sat back. I said, you know, it took a lot of stones to walk in here. You don't know me very well. And I said, he said, I know, but you're a good person. And I need your help. I said, before I help you, I need the truth. What happened to my son? And my son went to this kid's house. They were all snorting heroin. This kid gave my son a bar of Xanax. About an hour later, they knew my son was overdosing, and they panicked. They didn't call 911. They didn't know about the Good Samaritan law where they wouldn't get arrested. One of the kids had a warrant, so they propped my son on the sofa, went in the basement, did more drugs, came up an hour later, and my son was dead. So I looked at this kid, and I said, so you let my son die? He said, I did let your son die. And then I said, well, I saw you at my son's funeral. What have you been doing since then? He said, after Nick's funeral, I checked myself into treatment. I did a 30-day program. I'm now living in a sober home. And I said, well, what can I do to help you? He said, well, I'm not grasping this thing called recovery. Would you please be my sponsor? And I said, yeah, absolutely. So that's how I live my life today. I can't blame anyone. I hate the disease, love the addict. But, you know, I've truly transformed into a different person. I don't want anyone going through what my former wife went through. You know, the disease of addiction took her husband, her beautiful house, and her firstborn child. I wouldn't wish opiate addiction or addiction in general on my worst nightmare. And there is hope. There is light at the end of the tunnel, but you got to work for it. It's not just, there's no silver bullet.
Right. Oh my gosh. I mean, that, you know, it's such a powerful story, and the fact that you were able to find forgiveness and help that boy, knowing, you know, that he didn't take action when your son was dying. What would you say? This brings up a good point. You know, if there's a young, you know, teenager right now or a young person listening who's addicted to heroin, you mentioned a couple of things in there about the Good Samaritan law, and what do they need to know? What message do you want to, what do you want to say to them if they're listening right now?
I want you to know that there's help. But the thing is, you've got to put up your hand. You've got to pick up the phone, go to my website, and reach out for help. A lot of people just don't know where to get the help. And a lot of parents, you know, I was on WGN radio in Chicago about 3 months ago. I was supposed to be on for 15 minutes. They kept me on almost an hour. I am still getting people. I got a message from a kid yesterday whose mom saved the podcast, and now he reached out for help. This girl that passed away the other day, one of her friends that she was with, we went to work with her to get her into treatment. The parent said, "I've had your business card." I said, "Why didn't you pick up the phone and call me?" She said, "I was kind of embarrassed and afraid to." So we've got to drop the stigma. It is a progressive and chronic disease, and there is help out there. And if I can't help you, I know how to guide and direct you to get the resources. It's tough. Nobody wants to be an opiate addict, but most people don't know how to get help.
And that's the greatest barrier to them getting clean, is that they don't know how to get help. I understand you started a foundation. Now, is this foundation to help? What exactly is it, and what is the goal of your foundation?
It's a Man in Recovery Foundation. Like I said, we take people from dope to hope, helping one addict at a time. We are a 501c3 not-for-profit. I actually started writing the business plan why I was in prison. I knew I was done drinking and using. I was going to turn my life over. So what I wanted to do, basically, we guide and direct families prior to getting into treatment based on, you know, no insurance, state insurance, or good insurance. And then we work with them upon release from treatment, whether it's running our support groups, connecting them with the right sober living home. I like to be able to, like this poor mother that lost her daughter the other day, they have no resources. Mom can't even pay for the funeral. So we can be able to go give the family a check to help offset the cost of the funeral services. The main vision I have with this, we've actually got a really cool program. We're the second town in the United States to where drug addicts, it's in Dixon, Illinois, to where drug addicts can walk into the police station, turn in their drugs or turn in their syringes, and we'll put them into treatment, no questions asked. In the first 3 weeks, we put 18 people into treatment. So I'm trying to shift this. We can't arrest our way out of this problem here. So we're working with more police stations doing this angel amnesty program. One of the main visions I have, though, is I'd like to build some sober farms to where kids, once they come out of treatment, they can come to one of our facilities. They spend 12 to 18 months. They still work spirituality, recovery, if they have any underlying mental health issues. If they need to get a GED, we'll get them that. But the one thing that's missing with these kids is job training. So if we can have 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 self-sustaining businesses learning welding, culinary arts, growing organics, carpentry, and they can walk out of our facility after 12 to 18 months and be sober and be able to get a job at $12 to $15 an hour and be a productive member of society, then they've got a true opportunity at recovery. There's so many variables involved in here. I know the state I live in, Illinois, is completely broke. There's no resources, so we rely heavily on donations from corporations, families, whatever. We'll even pay to get people into treatment. So we do whatever we can to help the families struggling in addiction.
That sounds like an amazing idea, the sober farms. I think, what happens and often is, a child will go or someone goes any to a recovery for 30 days, maybe 60 days or even 90 days, and then they come out and they're back in the same environment with the same friends and the same surrounding
Bingo.
people. And
Yep. Well,
and then they go back again. They need that, long term.
they do, and I'll take my son for instance. Nick was in six local treatment centers. And Nick loved treatments. He'd go and do his 30 days, and the last time he's like, "Dad, I'm afraid to get out." I'm like, "Nick, I'm here. You got to roll with me." 3 weeks later, he's back to the old friends. He's not plugging into recovery for whatever reason. And he's back using mind-altering substances, and it ultimately took his life. But our system's broken nationwide. A lot of families, they send their kid to treatment. They think 3, 4 weeks, and they're cured. That is just the beginning of the process. Recovery is a journey. It's not a race. And whether it's sober coaching, mentoring, and guiding these people, but that's like with Banyan, we can usually keep someone in our center for up to 6 months, and it's a step-down program, and they're doing outpatient after they do their 30 days and working with sober coaches and having to get into a 12-step program and get a job and be a productive member and randomly drug tested. And it gives them a much better shot at turning their life around than 3 to 4 weeks in a treatment center, and they're right back home. They have, 1% chance of truly grasping things and turning their lives around.
Yeah, it's a huge problem because, most of these addiction treatment centers, if the insurance, you can run out, and most of them are very expensive. And so, parents put them in for the 30 days, and they think that, the money they spent on that the child's cured. But it's like you said, it's really a long-term process. And having somewhere like a sober farm that can be affordable, or that they can go to, would be so important. So how could with people listening now, for your foundation and for the creation of these sober farms, and obviously you need money, where can people send a donation? I know they can go to your
They can go
website.
right to our website, www.amirf.org. They can make a donation through a credit card, through PayPal. They can reach out. We've been writing grants, getting corporate donations and sponsorship. The thing is, we received our 501c3 status probably 4 months ago. I've got a team of people working for us. We're total volunteer based. I will never, mark my words, I will never take a dollar salary from my foundation. I'm executive director and founder. When I do speaking engagements, I'll either get paid or take a donation. Every dollar goes back into the foundation, basically to give away, to help, to build. But we need more people on our team. I'm one man with the team of people working for me, but it's really getting people to step up to the plate here and making sure these funds are given back. We have a powerful board of directors, and it's really time to make a difference here and drop the stigma, and really give these kids a shot. One thing I wanted to highlight on, when these kids are in treatment, the one aspect that's missing is the family. The family needs to be in treatment too, because when these kids come back home, and if the mom or dad or grandma don't understand what's going on and let the same old behaviors happen, the kids are going to go right back. So, the addict destroys the entire family, the siblings. I mean, it's carnage to the entire family. The whole family needs to get help, and a lot of places are not offering that right now.
That's very important. And the issue of codependency. The editor of Addiction 911 magazine, Debbie Sherrick, is a codependency coach, and she always says, that the sometimes the family members are, enabling. They're just as sick as the addict. They have the disease of codependency, and they need, like you said, they need treatment as well, because it's, the where you'll see an addict, you'll see, the enabler. Somebody's, that giving the money, or giving in, or being, it's like it's a dance between the two. And it's so true. I mean, more of treatment centers do need to incorporate getting the family involved and not putting the addicts back in that same environment that they came from, where, between the friends who are enabling and the family members, and it really diminishes their chance of success if they're, back with those enabling people around them.
It really does. And I do a number of things. I run my foundation. I do the motivational speaking and speak in high schools and all that, run our Dare to Know programs. But I'm also Midwest Outreach Director for Banyan Treatment Center, which is based out of Pompano Beach, Florida. We are opening a PHP intensive outpatient program in downtown Naperville, Illinois, which is the third largest town in the state. But that's one of the key aspects we're going to have is if they're child or loved one is in treatment 3 days a week or 5 days a week, the parent's going to be in at least 3 days a week. So we have that family getting the help, not just the person struggling. That's a key factor that's missing. And when I run our opiate recovery groups, I want people to understand I am absolutely not a clinician. I'm a stone cold drug addict who's figured out how to turn his life around. I was a very successful business entrepreneur, but I destroyed everything due to my bad choices and my substance abuse. But I give it to them in the raw. This is like kind of treatment in the raw. I don't candy coat anything. I call the parents on their BS. And they keep coming back and say, this is what we needed to be told. We didn't need some therapist. Well, okay, relapse is part of the journey and just send them back. No, relapse isn't part of the journey. You're either in recovery mode or you're not ready to get into recovery. But if you have the tools, the education, we can try to keep the person accountable and keep them on the right road. So there's so many facets to it. But I don't consider this a job. God had me go through 28 years of trials and tribulations to truly educate me. I know this better than most people because I lived it. I lost my son to it. I know what works and I know what doesn't work. And it's getting a lot of these kids struggling today have underlying mental health or underlying trauma issues. And once we deal with the substance abuse, we got to peel back the onion to get them to walk through these traumas. Or a lot of these young girls are prostituting themselves or abusive relationships or whatever. And until they're able to heal as a whole, they're always going to go back to using. That's what we do. We're addicts. We're creatures of habit.
Yeah, you bring up a very good point because there's the addict, like you mentioned before, who maybe gets hooked on from marijuana, gets get, increases the drugs and tries heroin, and then there's the addict with the dual diagnosis who's mentally ill, who's self-medicating, and that seems to be even more difficult to treat when you have somebody with an underlying mental illness. That's a
It
huge, huge
does, and
problem.
a lot of places don't know how to treat it, or they're treating it improperly, or someone who's bipolar is definitely medicating, or with ADD, there's three levels of ADD. Are they truly being treated at the right level? And also having a holistic approach, getting these people working out, giving them massage therapy, chiropractic, getting their positive energies flowing in their body. So you can start getting the dopamine and serotonin popping again. These drugs have suppressed all the feel-good chemicals in our brain. It's a long journey. It's a long process. But trust me, if I'm sitting here talking to you today with the beautiful life I have today due to my recovery, anybody can do it. I had a beautiful house. I had a beautiful office in the Wrigley Building in downtown Chicago. But, a couple nights a week, instead of going home to my wife and kids, I was under Lower Wacker Drive shooting dope with the homeless people because that's where I was comfortable. I wasn't comfortable in my own skin, and I was driven by fear. And once I was able to walk through that and stay grounded with my spiritual relationship and keeping my recovery first, everything falls into place the way it's supposed to.
And I wanted to congratulate you on the birth of your new baby daughter, and that's exciting news. And does it feel different having children as someone who's clean and sober? I mean, the difference when you just met.
Absolutely. I had Nicholas, who unfortunately passed away. I have Maxwell, who's 17. I have my daughter, Tanner's 16, and then Abria is 14. And I was always there, but I wasn't there because I was under the influence. And when Mackenzie was born, she was in ICU for a couple of days, and be able to go sit in there with her and just hold her and embrace this miracle of life and be sober, my whole perspective, everything has changed. And Yeah, I know God called one of my kids home, but to bless me with another one unexpectedly, it's an absolute gift. And I cherish every day. The best times of my day are in the morning when I'm holding her and feeding her, and at nighttime when I get to hold her and just say thank you, Lord. I'm truly blessed, and all the other things don't really matter. I have a healthy child, I have a sober life, and without my sobriety, I wouldn't have anything.
And that is such an inspiration for anyone who's going to be listening to this, who's in the struggling with addiction right now, to see you after 28 years come out on the other side better than ever, helping other people. And also for so many mothers and parents out there who've lost a child to addiction and feel hopeless and are caught in the grips of depression and grief, to know that what you've taken that and turned it around and are now saving lives. So, I mean, that's really incredible that you can do that, because that's re it can really just destroy. To lose a child is the worst thing ever in the entire world, and it's really amazing that you've been able to turn that around and do something positive with that.
Well, I had to. And it's like even the parents that come to my support groups, I'll tell them, what else are you doing besides coming to my group? Get involved in Al-Anon, Families Anonymous, Nar-Anon, see a therapist, because a lot of the parents are so sick. But there is hope. There is light at the end of the tunnel. A lot of times I get phone calls from parents all over the country that just want somebody to talk to understand, and I'm here. But on the flip side, I give it to you in the raw. I'll call parents on their BS all day long, and no wonder why your kid doesn't want to change. You're letting them do all these things. So yeah, I'm just truly blessed every day, and for today I won't change anything. I love my life, and I have my life, and I have another shot at it. I'm a guy that overdosed 8 times. I was clinically dead
Wow.
3. I've had 2 mild heart attacks. I should not be sitting here talking to you, but God's got other plans for me. So we're rocking and rolling. We got a good deal worked out. I keep doing what he does, and he keeps opening doors for me. So I just want people to know there is definitely hope at the end of the tunnel.
That's amazing. I mean, you're doing incredible work. And again, I just want to just spell out your website. It's A as in apple, M as in man, I as in ice cream, R as in rabbit, F as in Frank dot org. And you
Yep,
could be reached.
manandrecoveryfoundation.org, or by email, it's T as in Tom, R as in rabbit, Y as in yak, A as in apple, N as in Nancy, T Ryan at amirf.org, or you can call my cell phone directly, 312-502-8671.
I mean, this has
I
been
am
really
available
incredible.
24/7. Since I've been on this interview with you, I think I've had 14 messages. So,
Oh my God. So yeah, I got to let you go to go do your work. And
no.
just really quickly, mothers, parents out there, don't be ashamed. Listen to what Tim said. Reach out for help. Don't get into the stigma of addiction. There's help out there for you. So I want to thank you so much, Tim. We're going to get this message out and get this out on our podcast and spread the word, because what you said today is it can save lives, and it will save lives. And I want to thank you for saving
And
lives.
I
You're
thank you. It's people
incredible.
like you that are making a difference and helping people like me get the word out there. And we're doing this together. We're trying to combat this epidemic, and we're taking people from dope to hope. So I thank
Yeah.
you for your time and wish you the best. And if there's anything I can do, you know how to reach me.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Tim. It was been an honor having you on the show today. And we look forward to having you back again. Thank you so
Have a
much.
blessed day. Thank you very much.